Welcome to the February 2015 issue of Dialogues in Dermatology. The American Academy of Dermatology is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. The American Academy of Dermatology designates this enduring material for a maximum of 2 AMA PRA Category 1 credits. Physicians should claim only the credit commensurate with the extent of their participation in the activity. This activity is recognized by the American Academy of Dermatology for 2 AAD recognized credits and may be used toward the AAD CME award. Participation in this activity is completed by listening to dialogues on CD or a downloaded MP3 file, achievement of a 70% or higher score on the post-test, and completion of an activity evaluation. The date of original release for this issue is February 2015. The expiration date is January 2018. At the conclusion of this learning activity, participants should be able to describe molecular pathways discovered to be effective targets for treating melanoma, basal cell carcinoma, and dermatofibrosarcoma protuberans. Recognize current targeted immunotherapies used in the treatment of tumorous cancers. And identify specialized tests and techniques utilized by dermatopathologists in the interpretation of atypical melanocytic lesions. Contributors to this issue of Dialogues in Dermatology have disclosed the following financial relationships. Dr. Michael Girardi has been a principal investigator for and received grants and research funding from Gilead Sciences, Inc., and has been a principal investigator for and received fees from Merck & Company, Inc. Dr. Delphine Lee has been a principal investigator for and received fees from Allergan, Inc., and has served on the advisory board and received honoraria from Biogen. Dr. Martin Mim has served on the advisory board and received no compensation from Melasciences, has been a consultant for and received other financial benefits from SCADA, Inc., and is a consultant and received patent royalties or other compensation for intellectual property rights from Wiley & Sons, Inc. All other contributors, including editors, interviewees, reviewers, and staff, reported they have no relevant relationships with commercial interests. A comprehensive list of disclosed financial relationships is available in the syllabus.
Welcome back to Dialogues in Dermatology. This is Terry Cronin, your Editor-in-Chief. This is Dialogues in Dermatology for February 2015, Volume 71, Issue 2. I hope you're having a wonderful month. I want to remind you about the wonderful new Dialogues in Dermatology app for your smartphone and computer. We're always looking for fun, effective ways to provide CMEs for you, and this convenient app will make dialogues even more enjoyable. In this month's edition, we have exciting new dialogues with a theme on the clinical application of bench research and how that translates into better care for our patients. What makes a cancer cell harmful? One definition that I like to use with patients is that cancer is uncontrolled, disorganized growth. Cancer has the ability to divide without the controlling signaling mechanisms our bodies have put in place. In recent years, many new biologic agents have been developed for the treatment of various types of skin cancers, specifically targeting the division pathways that cancers, such as melanoma, have bypassed. With these new treatments emerging, we should recognize the value of bench research and its applications for dermatologic disease. In this dialogue, we join Dr. Oscar Colegio and Dr. Christine Koh in Bench to Bedside, a discussion of some of the important clinical advances that are moving from bench research to actual patient treatment.
Hello and welcome to Dialogues in Dermatology. Today I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Oscar Colegio, who is an assistant professor of dermatology at Yale University, and I have the pleasure of working with him there and not seeing him every day, but sometimes. So welcome to Dr. Colegio. And I think Dr. Colegio has particular expertise in this because he is an MD as well as a PhD, and he has a lab that focuses on immunology. So Oscar, what are some of the things that we should know about in terms of novel therapies that are coming from bench to bedside?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I'd like to begin by really highlighting the idea that prior to the advent of really dissecting molecular determinants behind oncogenesis and the progression of cancer, most chemotherapeutic agents used for the treatment of skin cancer as well as visceral cancers have focused on the concept that a cancer needs to divide. And to stop division, What is used are agents that can either intercalate into the DNA, the genetic material which encodes proteins that are expressed by the cell, or alkylating agents, which again bind up DNA and prevent division, as well as anti-metabolites, which are essentially like a poison to the cancer, which prevent it from being able to utilize the nutrients it needs to be able to divide. And in doing so, you can stop cell division within a cancerous cell, but you're also stopping cell division within non-cancerous cells. And any dividing cell is as susceptible to the toxicities of agents that are non-specific and specifically target cell division. What's been very exciting in skin cancer over the past 10 years and in cancer in general has been taking what has been discovered at the bench and really demonstrating that it in fact does bear quite significantly to oncogenic mechanisms. And specifically, I would like to highlight the overall concept that in the three cancers that I will be discussing, melanoma, basal cell carcinoma, and dermatofibrosarcoma protuberans, the drugs that have come to market and are currently under investigation really target this concept of cell receptor being what is used as a way for the cell to know whether it is okay to proliferate or not. And then the subsequent cascade of second messengers, principally the MAP kinase pathway, but there are others such as the hedgehog pathway that subsequently lead to gene transcription and cell proliferation. And for these three skin cancers, the discoveries have really targeted very specific proteins that are unique to each of them and have demonstrated that you can abrogate the progression of these cancers. So to begin with, let's begin with melanoma. Back in 2002, it was discovered that BRAF was mutated in a significant number of melanomas, as well as in nevi. BRAF is one of these second messengers, which is downstream of a receptor tyrosine kinase. And this receptor tyrosine kinase can then activate the RAS protein, which can then activate the RAF proteins. BRAF is one of three, ARAF, BRAF, and CRAF. That then can lead to phosphorylation of MEK, which can lead to phosphorylation of ERK, which can then migrate to the nucleus and lead to transcription and cell proliferation. Upon discovering the mutation of BRAF, in a very novel structure-guided discovery approach, a small molecule was designed to specifically target the mutated form of BRAF, which resulted in the preventing of melanomas that had BRAF mutations from dividing. This was the first time that this structure-guided discovery had been used as a model for discovering agents. But not only that, it was the first time that a drug was shown to confer some survival benefit in advanced melanoma. From 1840, when Samuel Cooper stated that melanoma was incurable after its advanced stages, nothing that had come to market had really been able to improve survival until these agents came out. Now, with many small molecules, cells can develop resistance to BRAF inhibitors, and downstream of RAF, as I mentioned, is MEK. And what's been very exciting in this past year is demonstration that inhibition of MEK alone, even though it's not the mutated protein, can lead to survival benefit. But more importantly, in a major study that was published in this past year, the combination of a BRAF inhibitor and MEK inhibitor resulted in significant improvement of progression-free survival at 1 year in advanced melanoma, 41% at 1 year in the combination study versus 9% in BRAF inhibition alone. So the combination of these two working along the same pathway has proved to be a significant impact in the treatment of advanced melanoma.
Yeah, I think a lot of what you've said is so interesting, and I think one of that you mentioned that I want to emphasize is that the BRAF inhibitor specifically binds to the mutated BRAF, and that's how it was designed. It was structure-based, as you said. So that's why if for example, a melanoma does not have a BRAF mutation, you can't use a BRAF inhibitor for one, but also once that mutated BRAF is bypassed, then the melanoma grows again. And that's, you know, as you just brought up, that wonderful study showing that if you also block something downstream like MEK, then they can both work kind of synergistically and help avoid that kind of outcome. So the other thing that was interesting about that study was how it can sometimes reduce side effects as well. So I thought I would just ask you a little bit about that, that when we do examine these patients on BRAF inhibitors, because they do need regular skin checks, some people even recommend every 2 months to have a total body skin exam, what kinds of things should we be looking out for?
With BRAF inhibitors, one of the side effects that was most notable in the original phase one study was that about 30% of the trial patients or the subjects developed squamous cell carcinomas and keratoacanthomas. And that was surprising because it was a seemingly complete off-target effect. It's thought that vemurafenib can lead to stabilization of other non-mutated RAF proteins that may lead to uncovering RAS mutations that exist in keratinocytes. And these RAS mutations then can lead to the development of squamous cell carcinoma and keratoacanthomas. Interestingly, inhibition of MEK, which is downstream of that, is able to reduce, if not completely abrogate, the development of these lesions.
It is fascinating that they predicted that inhibiting something downstream would probably help to decrease this side effect, for example, these squamous cell carcinomas, and it was true, so it's fascinating. But since we don't have that much time, I just want to move on now to basal cell carcinoma.
So in basal cell carcinoma, in parallel, discoveries were made back in 1996 that the PATCH gene was mutated in basal cell nevus syndrome, in basal cell carcinomas from basal cell nevus syndrome patients, as well as in sporadic basal cell carcinomas. And like in melanoma, PATCH is a surface receptor that inhibits another protein called smoothened. Smoothened functions like a oncogene in a sense, and when you lose the inhibition of smoothened, you have unimpeded activation of the downstream cascade and subsequent cell proliferation. Between 96 and 2012, a lot was done in the discovery, a characterization of this pathway, and the discovery of a small molecule, Vismodegib, which is used now and approved by the FDA back in 2012 for the treatment of basal cell nevus syndrome. And like with BRAF inhibition, this small molecule inhibits the protein that's functioning like an oncogene to reduce the size of basal cells and to prevent the development of new basal cells in patients with basal cell nevus syndrome and with advanced unresectable basal cell carcinomas. Vismodegib was also rationally discovered in a screen of small molecules that could inhibit the activation of the promoter that is used to transcribe GLI, GLI, which is a molecule that leads to cell cycle progression within basal cells. And in discovering the small molecule, it was then shown to have clinical effect in basal cell carcinoma. On the horizon, what is interesting is that other small molecules have been discovered to also target basal cell carcinomas. Now, this is clearly beyond off-label. It has not been studied in humans in vivo, but in two major papers, it was found that itraconazole and arsenic trioxide are able to also inhibit smoothened by a mechanism independent of the cyclopamine analogs like vismodegib. So, as I mentioned with BRAF inhibitors, resistance is a problem in cancers to small molecules. And in some medulloblastomas, which also have hedgehog pathway mutations in the PATCH gene, smoothened can become mutated so that it's resistant to vismodegib. It turns out that itraconazole, an antifungal agent, independent of its properties as a sterol inhibitor, biosynthesis inhibitor, is able to inhibit smoothened and thus lead to reduction in transcription of GLI, and in animal models reduces medulloblastoma progression. A clinical trial was opened for the study of arsenic trioxide earlier this year to see whether it affects GLI transcription in basal cell carcinoma. So keep your eye out on the horizon for the use of itraconazole and arsenic trioxide. But again, these are in animal models at this point. But again, a very exciting potential therapy for our patients who develop resistance to these small molecule agents.
Right. That's fascinating. I'm sure since it's off-label and only studied in animals yet, we don't really know the dosing or anything like that.
Correct. We don't know the dosing. It is thought that the serum levels that are required are the same serum levels that are commonly found for the treatment of fungal diseases, though. So.
And if you're wondering why, well, if we already have Vismodegib, why do we really need anything else? Vismodegib does have a side effect profile that is somewhat difficult for patients to tolerate in the initial trial. I believe about, was it up to even 30% of patients actually discontinued the medicine because of side effects? Can you just tell us briefly what some of those side effects are?
So some of the side effects that have limited the use of Vismodegib in some patients include muscle cramps, as well as alopecias, and dysgeusia.
Yes, and dysgeusia means taste alteration. And I guess it was actually pretty bothersome enough that patients didn't want the medicine. But I think it was mainly the muscle cramps that can really be quite severe.
Optimization of therapy and whether Vismodegib should be continued or whether it should be used in cycles to allow patients to recover from some of these adverse events are not established but are being explored.
All right, so moving on then to dermatofibrosarcoma protuberans.
So along the lines of small molecules that inhibit oncogenic pathways from receptor to cell cycle progression is dermatofibrosarcoma protuberans, which derives from a translocation between the collagen 1 promoter and PDGF beta. Now, PDGF beta, platelet derived growth factor beta, is a mitogenic protein. And this protein is produced by cells that undergo this translocation. They secrete it, and in an autocrine and paracrine fashion, this small molecule leads to activation of the PDGFB receptor, and that leads to cell cycle progression. So what's interesting about dermatofibrosarcoma protuberans is that the lesion is not within the signaling cascade, but actually a translocation that leads to production of a growth factor. So the small molecule does not target any mutated protein along the cascade of cell cycle progression. Rather, it targets specifically the receptor, the ears on the surface of the cell that hear the signal that's produced by that mutated cell. So it is not oncolytic in a sense, but really stops the cell from being able to, quote, hear the signal that's being produced from this translocation. And in 2006, the FDA approved imatinib, which was originally discovered as a kinase inhibitor for ABL, which also is unregulated subsequent to translocation in chronic myelogenous leukemia, was approved for the inhibition of ABL. It was approved for DFSP in 2006. It should be noted that the third kinase that shares sequence homology or structural homology to PDGFB as well as ABL is KIT, and that's why imatinib has been studied in KIT either amplified or KIT overexpressing melanomas, which are typically of the acral and mucosal type.
All right, well, that's fascinating. I particularly like the way you explained the ears on the cell and how it blocks that. I think that's it's a very helpful analogy. So what else is coming or has been coming out in terms of other cancer treatments?
So I emphasized initially this concept of discovery of molecular determinants of oncogenesis and the concept that when at any point when they're dysregulated, you can lead to uncontrolled cell proliferation. But when a cell does undergo a hit and can no longer care for itself, there are other mechanisms that the body has to control it. Some of them are cell autonomous, such as senescence. So you think, and senescence is a state in which cells do not proliferate. Melanocytes that undergo BRAF mutation subsequently proliferate, leading to a nevus formation. And at a certain point, that nevus is thought to undergo a program of senescence and stop proliferating. And it isn't until another genetic hit develops that it then can become a melanoma. A cell non-autonomous mechanism by which stressed cells or mutated cells can be controlled is the immune system. And the immune system is very powerful not only in controlling infection and keeping us healthy and infectious free, but can also be used to eliminate cells that are in some way damaged. Cancerous cells are damaged, and the immune system is critical in eliminating those cells. In states of severe immunosuppression, whether that is iatrogenic or whether it is acquired, or whether it is primary, there are numerous examples of how cancers can become more common. On the flip side of that, the use of the immune system and harnessing the power of the immune system against cancers has been the other exciting development that has come out over the past 10 years. So briefly, to develop an immune response against either a bacteria or a virus or a cancerous cell, what is required is an antigen-presenting cell, which can present an antigen on its surface receptor to a T cell. And a T cell can then recognize its cognate antigen. That's considered signal one. Signal two is a co-receptor, a co-stimulatory molecule that tells the T cell that something is wrong. When those two are present, the T cell then undergoes a process of activation that leads to upregulation of molecules such as interleukin-2. That's considered signal three, which leads to autocrine and paracrine activation of T cell and expansion of the clone to that clone that recognizes the cognate antigen. In addition to those activating molecules, there are co-stimulatory molecules that may be called co-inhibitory molecules that are also on the surface that stop the T cell from proliferating. And it's thought that these may be important in preventing immune response against self, as is seen in autoimmune disease. They are essentially surface receptors that lead to a break in the system. So they're one is the gas and one is the break. The cancer cells and other cells within tumors express essentially molecules that can activate the break in T cells and thus prevent the proliferation of those T cells, leading to a limitation of the development of T cells that are targeting that cancer. What's been very exciting is the development of antibodies that can block the signal between the antigen-presenting cell or tumor cell and the molecules that lead to the break. If you put a break on the break, you have unimpeded gas, so to speak. And so, therefore, you're allowing cells that would otherwise be stopped to proliferate and to expand. And so these two molecules that have been explored are CTLA-4 and PD-1. And two molecules have been, and agents against these molecules have led to dramatic responses in advanced melanomas by enabling the immune response to attack the melanoma, leading to regression. What's striking about the use of this immune approach, essentially a cancer vaccine against these advanced cancers, is that unlike the small molecules, the effect with these in patients who do respond seems to be more durable. So that once you develop that immune response, the cancer can be held in check, not for months, but for years.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Oscar Colegio.
Thank you for having me.
In 2002, it was discovered that there is a high frequency of BRAF mutations in melanoma. Researchers use this knowledge of the MAP kinase molecular pathway to develop specific biologic agents to target and prevent cell division. The BRAF inhibitor venurafenib is used for the treatment of metastatic melanomas that are BRAF positive. Other biologics recently approved for the treatment of metastatic melanoma include imatinib and ipilimumab. Imatinib can be used for KIT-positive mutations in early-stage melanomas. Ipilimumab is a monoclonal antibody that promotes T-cell activation that results in anti-tumor effects on metastatic melanoma. The newest form of biologic treatment for BRAC and NRAS mutated melanoma are MEK inhibitors. In a review published in Current Opinion in Oncology in 2014, MEK inhibitors used as a monotherapy appeared to provide minimal benefit for patients that were previously treated with a BRAF inhibitor. MEK inhibitors were most beneficial to BRAF inhibitor naive patients. The greatest benefit was seen when BRAF and MEK inhibitors were combined. The first FDA-approved MEK inhibitor was trametinib. Of course, melanoma isn't the only skin cancer that recent laboratory advances have worked out the oncogenic pathway for. Basal cell carcinoma has been linked to mutations in the Patch gene involved in the Sonic the Hedgehog pathway. Vismodegib, an orally bioavailable hedgehog signal pathway inhibitor targeting smoothin, has been approved for the treatment of advanced BCC. Although the use of vismodegib has been beneficial, there has been quite a bit of resistance. Studies looking at the combined use of histone deacetylase inhibitors and hedgehog pathway inhibitors to prevent resistance that is caused by vismodegib have showed promising results in the treatment of not only basal cell carcinoma, but also medulloblastoma. The biologic treatment of cancer is a constantly changing and expanding field. These monoclonal antibodies treating cancer at the molecular level truly show the importance of bench research and its ability to directly translate into clinical treatment. In combination with the ability to screen for specific genetic markers in cancers, such as melanoma, the treatment with biologics is more individualized to each tumor.